Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Before we get into the show, I want to thank listeners for their pledges of support for this station and the WBAI staff who continue to keep the station on the air. But also my thoughts go to those severely affected by this massive storm that had caused untold devastation. We're going to get into some of the details behind the scenes on the storm. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's a story. It was posted on a website, Press Corps. It's a Canadian website. Someone sent it to me on Tuesday afternoon. And then the website disappeared, essentially. I tried to go back to it. Luckily, I grabbed the text. Obama's October surprise, creating and steering Hurricane Sandy. Now, stay with me here. The U.S. government is using HAARP, sea-based X-band radar platform, to intensify and steer the man-made Hurricane Sandy. Hurricane Sandy is Obama's October surprise, create and steer a hurricane and cause mass destruction. And I would add, with plausible deniability. The U.S. Air Force Navy SBX is steering Hurricane Sandy into New York. These are assertions without evidence, however. We're going to try to look at some of the possible evidence that are related to these assertions. Now, the X-band radar is a platform with a giant dome on top of it. You may have heard reference to this in the alternative media right after the earthquake in Japan and then subsequently the disaster in Fukushima. The sea-based X-band radar was floating back across the Pacific to the U.S. coast. And the article continues, this isn't the first time the U.S. government steered a hurricane into a major U.S. city. In 2005, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney successfully steered Hurricane Katrina into New Orleans. In 2010, NASA successfully intensified Tropical Depression Earl into a Category 4 hurricane and controlled its path. Hurricane Earl for 11 days in Project GRIP, G-R-I-P, Genesis and Rapid Intensification Processes. On August 11, 2010, NASA announced that it was less than 2 weeks away from initiating Project GRIP, Genesis and Rapid Intensification Processes, their quest for the Holy Grail of hurricane research. Project GRIP discovered the exact conditions required to kickstart a tropical depression into a hurricane. Scientists already knew how hurricanes develop and how to steer them, but NASA wanted to perfect the processes that intensify depressions to form into very intense, spinning storms of mass destruction. Here's a quote from one of the scientists on the project. Quote, hurricane formation and intensification is really the holy grail of this field, said Ed Zipser, an atmospheric scientist at the University of Utah and one of three program scientists helping to lead the Genesis and Rapid Intensification processes. Quote, we want to see storms that become hurricanes, and we want to see some that don't become hurricanes so we can compare data. The same is true for hurricane intensification. That's a quote from GRIP project manager Marilyn Vasquez. The article continues. I'm going to go through most of this article. I usually don't. But this is an important one that connects a lot of pieces together. NASA used various weather-modifying technology to develop, intensify, and steer a hurricane. The available technology included a powerful microwave radiometer and a radar, and a NASA-designed and built LIDAR. That's a laser radar. The laser radar were mounted on a global HAWKS and were used to heat the top of a hurricane, to weaken a hurricane and steer them. The radar that NASA used was the sea-based X-band radar, a floating, self-propelled, military-controlled and operated mobile radar station capable of operating in high winds and heavy seas. The sea-based X-band radar platform is part of the U.S. Defense Department Ballistic Missile Defense System. Again, the X-band radar was in the news, in the alternative media, for a little while after the earthquake and tsunami in Fukushima. So let's just look at some of the details of the X-band radar. The sea-based X-band radar is the world's largest floating phased array X-band radar. It is operated by the U.S. Department of Defense Missile Defense Agency, and its movement and location is classified. In 2005, it was engaged in a 52-day deployment in the Gulf, where it completed more than 100 major test activities. The 52-day deployment started in late August and ended on October 14, 2005. Air Force Lieutenant General Henry Trey Obering, director of the MDA, said it had demonstrated the ability to achieve most of its major operational and sustainment capabilities. The SBX was in the Gulf at the same time as Hurricane Katrina formed on August 23, 2005. On Saturday, August 27, 2005, the storm reached Category 3 intensity on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane scale, becoming the third major hurricane of the season. An eyewall replacement cycle disrupted the intensification but caused the storm to nearly double in size. Katrina again rapidly intensified, attaining Category 5 status on the morning of August 28th, and reached its peak strength at 1 p.m. Central Daylight Time that day, with maximum sustained winds of 175 miles per hour and a minimum central pressure of 902 millibars. The Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate, which directs agencies from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, expressed major interest in the science of hurricane modification. Quote, "It sounds kind of crazy and science fiction-ish, but it's really the direction we need to go in." This is Chris Doyle, head of Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Research Division. He said this at a conference at the American Meteorological Society in May of 2008. As many listeners know, hurricanes form when air warmed over the ocean rises to meet the cool upper atmosphere. The heat turns to kinetic energy, producing a spiral of wind and rain. The greater the temperature differences between the top and the bottom, and the narrower the eye of the hurricane, the faster the wind blows. I might add in there's an electromagnetic component here. Heating the tops of hurricanes by scattering carbon particles or chemicals from aircraft flying above the storms would cause changes in the airflows within the storm. Satellites could also heat the tops by beaming microwaves from space. The unmanned X-37B is such a system. The X-37B was launched into orbit by the U.S. Air Force from Cape Canaveral using an Atlas V rocket. It looks like a mini space shuttle, but its purpose has been secret until now. The X and the B of its name reveals its true purpose. The X and the B stands for X-band. The 37 is a scintillation index at X-band, M equals 0 to 37 ratio. X-band is a segment of the microwave region of the electromagnetic spectrum. The X-37B is therefore an orbiting X-band phased array antenna consisting of thousands of antennae driven by transmit-receive modules. The TR modules are multifunctional circuits that can transmit, receive, and amplify signals. While in orbit, it can be maneuvered by the U.S. military to any part of the globe, whereby its position to heat up the ionosphere above a target area. Another X-37B was launched on March 5, 2011, with the mission designated USA-226. The military spacecraft is operated and controlled by the U.S. Air Force, which did not reveal the specific identity of the payload for the first flight, meaning the mission is classified. The Air Force has stated only that the spacecraft will, quote, demonstrate various experiments involving satellite sensors, subsystems, components, and associated technology. The vehicle is capable of being on orbit for up to 270 days. The Air Force stated the mission time would depend on progress of the craft's experiments during orbit. Now stay with me here. Same article. The X-37B military space plane was scheduled to be launched on October 25, 2012, but technical difficulties have postponed the launch until November 13, 2012. The X-37B top-secret mission, also known as Orbital Test Vehicle 3, was slated to blast off atop an Atlas V rocket on October 25th from Space Launch Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station in Florida. The liftoff is now scheduled for November 13th, according to ULA. Anyone seeing an unscheduled or unannounced launch from Cape Canaveral just prior to the formation of Hurricane Sandy? The X-37B was developed solely as a weapon of mass destruction using its phased array antenna. A phased array antenna is composed of lots of radiating elements, each with a phase shifter. Beams are formed by shifting the phase of the signal emitted from each radiating element to provide constructive-destructive interference so as to steer the beams in the desired direction. The signal is amplified by constructive interference in the main direction. The beam sharpness is improved by the destructive interference. Now, the land-based HAARP near Gakona, Alaska, the U.S. Navy's floating HAARP, sea-based X-band radar platform, its location is classified, and the Air Force's orbiting XB-37 all have the ability to focus radio signals in a precise direction. These three X-band phased array land, sea, and in orbit use these three X-band phased arrays uses extremely high frequencies to focus a powerful electromagnetic beam to specific locations in the Earth's ionosphere. All three heat the ionosphere. Ionosphere heating is now being used by the U.S. government to modify the natural ionosphere with the intent to cause extreme weather modification events such as hurricanes, monsoon rains, flooding, and heatwave drought. All three of the U.S. HAARP weather modification systems, the land-based system in Alaska, the sea-based SBX, and the mini-shuttle X-37B, were all built for use as military weather-modifying weapons of mass destruction. In direct violation of the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. That's the NMOD Treaty. As many listeners know, the East Coast is the most densely populated region of the U.S. In 2010, the population of the East Coast states, extending from Maine to Florida, was estimated at 112,642,503, 36% of the country's total population. That's 19 million in Florida, 19 million in New York State, with 8,244,910 people living in New York City alone, 8,821,155 for New Jersey, 8,906,000 in Virginia, all affected by the man-made and steered Hurricane Sandy. Talk about rigging the election. Now, this is getting interesting. I know this is a long article, but it's filled with bibliography and patents. And there are many comments below. Again, this website is gone. It was from Press Corps, PressCorp, Canada. Here's one comment. Coincidence or collateral damage? Is it just a coincidence that there's been a spike in earthquakes exactly at the same time as Hurricane Sandy is being steered to a major U.S. city? You tell me. The HAARP SBX beams a huge amount of microwave energy into the atmosphere above and ahead of the hurricane. To steer the hurricane, the SBX has to heat the atmosphere in front of where the U.S. government wants the hurricane to make landfall and cause extensive damage. When you beam any signal into the atmosphere, a lot of that energy is deflected back to Earth by the ionosphere atmosphere. If enough of that energy is deflected back to Earth, it can and has caused collateral damage in the form of earthquakes. The British Columbia 7.7 magnitude earthquake and all of the quakes since are in direct line of fire with the SBX beaming that is steering Hurricane Sandy. The earthquakes all coincide with the steering man-made course corrections of Hurricane Sandy. That comment leads to another article. But before we do that, check out this comment. Hurricane Sandy has done its job. Affect the 2012 elections. It forced Republican Mitt Romney to scuttle campaign events in Virginia and New Hampshire. Early voting in Maryland and D.C. were canceled Monday and Tuesday because of Hurricane Sandy. In terms of the Electoral College, Sandy's impact could be greatest in Virginia. Some polling places in the densely populated suburbs of northern Virginia were closed Monday. Northern Virginia is a key battleground, not just for the presidential election, but for a close U.S. Senate race as well. Some early voting stations were closed in coastal North Carolina counties. Several key swing states are in the storm's path. Early voting was also suspended Monday in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. All non-emergency federal employees were asked to stay home, and public transportation services were stopped. Early and absentee voting in swing states are already impacted in a major way by Hurricane Sandy. The U.S. Postal Service canceled FedEx transportation of mail-in absentee ballots to locations in Maryland, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New York, and Washington, D.C. on Monday. Hurricane Sandy has succeeded in making it more difficult for some people on the East Coast to cast ballots. This is definitely Obama's October surprise. Okay, now connecting back to the earthquake. Here's the article by Terry Wilson, CanadianAwareness.org. 7.7 earthquake hits where the geoengineering experiment took place. A 7.7 earthquake hit the coast of British Columbia on Saturday night, and there has since been as many as 40 aftershocks today, including one that measured 6.4 in magnitude. The quake sent many residents on the coast fleeing for higher ground due to tsunami warnings that were issued as far away as Hawaii. The earthquake originated on the island of Haida Gwaii, otherwise known as the Queen Charlotte Islands region. The islands are located along the Queen Charlotte Fault, which is an active transform fault that produces significant earthquakes every 30 years. The last one was in 1949. As soon as I caught the news of this quake today, the first thing that came to mind was, wasn't Haida Gwaii recently in the news? And yes, world's largest geoengineering test conducted off Canadian West Coast. In July 2012, a private businessman named Russ George, or as the Vancouver Sun had dubbed him, Rogue Climate Hacker, dumped over 100 tons of iron into the Pacific Ocean just off the coast of British Columbia, Haida Gwaii, in the largest ever geoengineering experiment. The iron is meant to help spawn plankton. Mainstream press have dubbed these creatures artificial plankton that will absorb carbon dioxide and then sink to the ocean bed. A geoengineering technique known as ocean fertilization. George hopes that this will be lucrative in carbon credits. But even the strongest of man-made climate change proponents agree that he's gone too far, and some are outraged, according to the mainstream news outlets. Could this simply be a coincidence? Well, as many in the alternative media have realized, coincidences in situations like this are very, very rare. This type of situation would also be ideal for any private corporation of government in the chance of a disaster and result of a geoengineering experiment of that scale. It gives plausible deniability. Since this is in the area of an active fault line, there's no chance of proving that the experiment caused the earthquake. Very interesting article I didn't know about. Russ George, the rogue climate hacker. This is, again, by Terry Wilson, CanadianAwareness.org. And I just want to mention a couple things about this hurricane. A friend of mine in the Bronx sent me a video showing a break in the overcast, maybe around Sunday, I think it was, before the storm. Break in the overcast, and what was revealed were what seemed to be 100-mile-long chemtrails in the sky, as far as you could see. And the what some people term sun dogs around the sun, we call them chembo, chemical rainbows around the sun, which seemed to be harmonics from the particulates. The atmosphere was saturated with particulates in order to make it conductive. There's a website called harpstatus.com. You might want to look at that. And they had current frequency magnitude readings. Blue is the zero, and tan is the white. Blue, green, yellow, orange, red, purple, pink, white. Right around the New York City area, the harp reading was white. In my humble assessment, I suspected that the cold front that was essentially moving from west to east would normally push any tropical storm or hurricane out to the Atlantic at this time of year. And according to this HARP status map, we can see there was a massive targeting of HAARP in the New York City area, which in my opinion weakens the front's ability to push the hurricane out to sea. So you have the saturation of particulates in the northeast sky. And the last several days on that weekend, from the 29th on, it's been warm and calm, unusually calm. But it allowed for the aircraft to easily build up a saturation point of metals, creating a conductive sky for HAARP. Now, talking with Dane Wigington, he had also pointed out that the millibar pressure of Hurricane Sandy was so low, it should have been a very powerful, much more powerful storm. He suspects it was geoengineered and downgraded in its power. The bigger geoengineering picture will be discussed in the interview. It was an interview that we did almost 2 weeks ago. Before we go to that interview, there's just a few more stories in other news. Now, we talked about why in the world are they spraying and the genetically modified food connection. Suzanne Goldenberg with The Guardian came out with this story today. Food companies Monsanto, DuPont, PepsiCo, Nestle spend $45 million to defeat California GM label bill Prop 37. The contentious measure would require labels on GM food sold in supermarkets, but would not cover restaurants. Monsanto and other agribusiness and food companies have spent more than $45 million to defeat a California ballot measure that would expire labeling of some GM foods. The measure, Proposition 37, is one of the most contentious initiatives on California's election ballot on Tuesday. If it passes, it would require labels on GM food sold in supermarkets, but not cover restaurants. It also has a number of gaping loopholes. For example, the law would not require labels on meat from animals that were fed GM corn. Even with those caveats, the agribusiness and food companies have outspent the yes side by 5-1, trying to kill the bill. Monsanto alone has spent more than $8 million. The bill is mainly supported by organic food companies, although the actor Gwyneth Paltrow also contributed $15,000. Supporters argue that consumers have a right to know if they're eating GM foods. Opponents, overwhelmingly corporations such as Monsanto, DuPont, PepsiCo, and Nestle, say the labels would be burdensome to retailers and would force prices to rise. Others support the idea of labels in general, but argue that this particular initiative is poorly written. A label requirement could have a sweeping effect on the American foods industry. About 90% of American-grown corn and soybean are GM. Other large crops, such as canola and sugar beet, also tend to be GM. Here's another story. Hurricane Sandy cost may hit $50 billion. Superstorm will cost about $20 billion in property damages and another $10 billion to $30 billion more in lost business. In the long run, the devastation the storm inflicted on New York City and other parts of the Northeast will barely nick the U.S. economy. That's the view of economists who say higher gas prices and a slightly slower economy in coming weeks will likely be matched by reconstruction and repairs that will contribute to growth over time. The short-term blow to the economy, though, could subtract about a 0.6 percentage point from the U.S. economic growth in the October-December quarter. Retailers, airlines, and home construction firms will likely lose some business. The storm cut power to about 7 million homes, shut down 70% of the East Coast oil refineries, and inflicted worse than expected damage in the New York metro area. That area produces about 10% of the U.S. economic output. New York City was all but closed off by car, train, and air. The superstorm overflowed the city's waterfront, flooded the financial district and subway tunnels, and cut power to hundreds of thousands. Here's another story that was just buried. No prank. On Halloween, U.S. forces train for zombie apocalypse. This is on the from the Christian Science Monitor by Anna Mulrine. Why is the U.S. military preparing for a zombie apocalypse? That's the latest training exercise that U.S. Marines and Navy Special Operations Forces will be taking part in on an island off the coast of San Diego starting on Wednesday. That's last Wednesday, Halloween. This is a very real exercise. This is not some type of big costume party. Brad Barker, president of the Halo Corp security company, he told the Associated Press. The scenario is dire, modeled in part on a public service campaign that the CDC launched last year, warning that U.S. citizens should be prepared in the event of a zombie invasion. It will play out Wednesday and Thursday at Halo's annual Counterterrorism Summit Security Conference, which will be attended by, among other people, former CIA Director Michael Hayden. Zombies will invade Paradise Point Resort, which covers 44 acres on an island that will be transformed with Hollywood-style sets, including a Middle Eastern village and a pirate cove. Some 1,000 U.S. military personnel, police, and state and federal government officials will be charged with responding. Quote, no doubt when a zombie apocalypse occurs, it's going to be a federal incident, so we're making it happen, Mr. Barker told the AP. The training scenario has not come without its share of unwelcome attention, he noted, adding that every whack job in the world has called about the exercise. And one more story. Smart meter opponents have three election choices. Sedona Times, Sedona, Arizona. In a letter to the SedonaEye.com, editor Warren Woodward of Sedona, Arizona, shares results of a question and answer survey that he asked of candidates for Arizona Corporation Commission. Woodward writes, here's a short story. If you do not want smart meters, smart meter opt-out fees, or utility rate hikes, then vote for both of the two Green Party candidates, Thomas Meadows and Daniel Pout. And the one Libertarian Party candidate, Christopher Gull, forget the Republicans and Democrats. For the long story, including my questions and the responses, read on. I like to make informed votes, he posed. So could you please answer the following questions? Do you think monopoly public utilities should be allowed to spend money on advertising? Do you think they should be allowed to make political donations? If elected, would you be for or against utility rate increases during your term? What is your opinion on any plan that would add an extra charge to ratepayers not wanting a smart meter? What is your opinion on automated, aka smart, metering in general? The three Republicans and three Democrats were emailed the questions twice. Since none of them chose to answer the first time, that in itself is a very bad sign. I've been to both Arizona Corporation Commission meetings on smart meters. I can assure you that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats on the commission have done their homework on the issue of smart meters. Both parties are in thrall of the monopoly utilities, and both seem incapable of critical thought. I'm going to go through just a couple of the points made by one Green Party candidate. I apologize for not getting back to you sooner. I wish that the campaign was my full-time occupation, but unfortunately it can't be. Here I go with my answers. Although I had not directly considered it, now that you mention it, advertising spending should probably be seriously curtailed. The only exception I would make is regarding campaigns to make their customers aware of programs that help them with costs of energy conservation. I would like to see all political donations from private companies, and if elected, I would work to introduce such rules for regulated utility monopolies. I would oppose all rate hikes for companies who are currently running a positive operating cash flow. If they can do that in a recession as big as the one we're in, they don't need any more of our money. APS made about $1 billion from operations in Arizona last year. At the same time, they executed about 60,000 service terminations. They also just had a rate hike approved. We need to redress the balance in favor of the Arizona resident. We go now to hear an interview with Dane Wigington. Dane has a background in lightning suppression and in solar power. He's worked on the construction of one of the first commercial solar electric facilities in the United States in the early 1980s. He's investigated the diminished solar charge capacities that have resulted as a consequence of the ongoing deployment of aerosols from jet planes in Shasta County, California. Dane has also investigated the impact the toxins in the aerosols are having upon ecosystems in Shasta County. And he's in the new film, Why in the World Are They Spraying? Listen to this interview. This interview goes deep into the bigger picture of geoengineering. I did try to interview him using a very cheap phone recorder, but it did not turn out worth broadcasting. So we're going to rebroadcast this interview. Let's have a listen.
Yes, sir, Jeff.
Thanks for joining us. I know you have a busy day, and I wanted to ask you, how has been the reaction to this film?
Reaction to Why in the World Are They Spraying has been very positive. It connects a lot of dots for a lot of people. Michael Murphy did an excellent job and put together the scenario in a way that people understand the financial aspects of this and who stands to gain from these programs. But on top of what the film portrays, we don't mean to say that that is all that's happening here. There certainly appears to be many, many layers to this onion, and it can get quite nefarious from here, perhaps. And there's more ramifications to the program than the film was able to cover. But certainly the film covers enough to give people a good hard look at the most dire issue that's not really being disclosed in any manner by most media.
That's true, and it's really frustrating to be aware of it and have some of the most trusted progressive media outlets turn away. I know that there's been some strange weather out where you're at in Northern California. Could you describe, Dane, what has happened in the last few days that you've seen and what's happening to your forests?
Well, yeah, the boreal forest, Jeff, around the globe, boreal forests being northern latitude forests, Pacific Northwest, Siberia, so forth. The boreal forests are indeed dying, and there's a number of reasons for this, and they really all, or the majority, lead back to geoengineering. Geoengineering blocks the sun, period. It alters the light wavelength form, so it does change photosynthesis in ways that there are no studies to really elaborate on at this time. We know that the rainfall being laden with these toxic materials and just the air, which settles down on the foliage, all have an effect. The bioavailable aluminum particles, the effects those have on organisms is well documented. They sterilize the soil more or less, change soil pHs, and you have a greatly diminished rainfall. This is really critical for people to understand with these programs. Geoengineering is not seeding the clouds to make it rain. The programs have the opposite effect. They diminish and disperse rainfall in order to create artificial cloud cover, which has hugely detrimental effects, including shredding ozone on top of everything else I just mentioned. So they're decimating the web of life, Jeff, from top to bottom.
Top to bottom. And also there is the desiccant of the aerosols that suppress the rain as the systems move over the West Coast into the middle of the country, and that's where the storms start to build and get a little more violent, and then they're shaping and I guess moving and guiding those weather events into the direction they would like them to go.
Indeed, the weather is getting more violent. The rain that has migrated across us doesn't necessarily fall in the center of the country, as people know now, because of the protracted drought. And indeed, global dimming, and people can look this figure up online, but global dimming right now is the term that describes the amount of sunlight that's no longer reaching the surface of the planet. It's 20%. Or higher, and that takes a tremendous amount of material in the atmosphere to block 20% of the sun, and that's what we have. And the desiccants, as you mentioned, that's really critical. People understand that because we don't see dew here in the mornings almost ever anymore. These materials absorb all available moisture in the atmosphere, and it sucks the moisture out of everything on the ground. Indeed, we're even seeing in alternative power systems, Jeff, on the West Coast, that the batteries, the lead-acid batteries, need twice as much water as they have historically, just because the air is so much drier than it has been historically. So imagine what it's doing to the forest. It's sucking the moisture out, and fuel moisture content in the forest in the Pacific Northwest and Northern California are at record lows. This is all signs of geoengineering.
You're right, and it's sucking the moisture out of the air. And the trees need something, and they're pulling in the toxins that are being sprayed, and that's contributing to their death.
Absolutely. A slow, protracted death. The effect of bioavailable aluminum on organisms such as trees is well documented. They sense the toxin, shut down nutrient uptake to avoid taking in this toxin, thus they die a slow, protracted death. And indeed, we're seeing this, and we're seeing some of the biggest tree mortality in the riparian areas where they would have had the most moisture, but they also have the most runoff and thus the most contamination. Oftentimes, we see them dying first. As Scott Stevens so accurately stated in the film, if you control the weather, you control the planet. And this is not hard to see if one really looks at all aspects of this. And on the why issue, again, there appears to be many layers here. It all comes down to money and power. And you have, as the film covers so accurately, the derivatives trading based on weather disasters. And what you have is literally the people that are making the weather, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and aspects of the government and stock trading, or those people are running a gaming casino on the market to bet on commodities and where the crops will crash and so forth. Then you have military strategic purposes, and that should be an obvious aspect of this. If you can drought a country out, as Ahmadinejad has already stated twice in front of the UN, he feels that Iran is the victim of weather modification, and you have Pakistan, who, when they weren't conforming with some U.S. requests, suddenly got wiped out with all-time record floods. You have another record in Thailand, who was asked to accommodate the U.S. for a base for weather observation purposes. When they drug their feet, suddenly they were up to their eyes in record flooding. And are these events connected? Perhaps. And when you have the scope and scale of weather modification that we have occurring, again, military strategic purposes.
Dane, I want to add one in there. The RNC, when the activists went down there to begin protests and demonstrations, massive rain that Hurricane Isaac was right over that area during the RNC.
It was. I even heard, I saw a piece from Rush Limbaugh that even alluded to the fact that he thought that's exactly what they were doing. So I guess when people like that take notice, you know it's on a high scale. The first Occupy movement in October, where they had the October snowstorm, again, appeared to be an ice-nucleated event.
It was that heavy, weird
wet
snow.
45-degree snow. And if people look this up, if they doubt that anything like this is possible, look up Chinese create snowstorms. You can find a mountain of data. You can look up NASA ice nucleation patent for that purpose, to create artificially ice-nucleated snowstorms, which is a high-temp snow, artificially induced, heavy wet snow, destroys trees. This data is out there for people who look.
Indeed. And you've answered the question why. There are many big reasons: strategic, war, prevent dissent and demonstration. I just want to add in that that same storm, Isaac, when it started to move up through the middle of the country, through the south, during the DNC, when demonstrations were beginning to be staged, the jet stream cut the weather system, Isaac, the remnants of it, in half. And there were these perfect conveyor belt of small, you know, purple in the radar storms going right over Charlotte. So, Dane, I think it's maybe it's a coincidence, but I don't think so with all the available data that we have.
There's just too many coincidences, and the jet stream movements we see now are completely unprecedented. We know that that's possible through the ionosphere heaters, of which HAARP is one of those facilities. So the scope and scale in which the weather is being manipulated and, in fact, decimated, it can hardly be quantified. And the gravity of what they're doing to our life support systems on this planet cannot be overstated. They are ripping apart Earth's life support systems,
Dane,
top to bottom.
In regard to HAARP, tell listeners what you told me yesterday or a couple of days ago regarding scientists acknowledging the use of this ionospheric heater.
Well, this is about as alarming as it gets. For the scientists who formerly acted as if HAARP didn't exist, now that we have methane mass expulsion occurring in the Arctic. And what this is, for people who don't understand the term, it's a massive methane release that's already begun on the East Siberian shelf of the Arctic. And this is going to change the planet on which we live at an unbelievable pace. And now the proposal from the scientific community, the statement is that our only chance to keep Earth habitable because of this methane release, and indeed this methane release is that serious, is to more or less nuke the atmosphere with various ionosphere heaters, HARP being one, to try to degrade this methane. Now, that's about as grabbing at straws as you could possibly get. I mean, what are they going to throw at us next, Jeff? Detonating nuclear bombs in the atmosphere to try to degrade this? I mean, their technology is only driving us further off the cliff by the day, and this is about as desperate a maneuver as I could imagine.
But I thought it was interesting, as you did, that they acknowledged publicly that these ionospheric heater stations exist and what they can do.
They did in this case, and I think right now they're in a panic because the global geoengineering programs appear to be one of the major causal factors to this methane being released in the first place. And if people wonder how severe this is, they should look up Arctic methane emergency and start to do some research, because our planet is changing by the day. Indeed, geoengineering appears to be one of, if not the most major causal factor to this happening. If they continue, I think our outlook is bleak indeed, Jeff.
So that's one aspect here, Dane, the methane release issue that is affecting the warming of the planet, but also focusing in on the geoengineering that's going on at the same time. The people who are involved with the geoengineering concepts and ideas are saying they're proposing this, but it's going on in real time.
Whether they're trying to pave the way for legitimizing these programs, which appear to have been going on for 60-plus years, with several large ramp-up periods, 2000 or 99, 2000, 05, 06, 08, 09, whether they're trying to legitimize that or whether they're so in a bubble that they don't even realize this has been going on and it's only hurting and not helping, it's hard to say. But clearly geoengineering is and has been a reality for a very long time, and the planet can't take much more, Jeff. If they continue these programs, the boreal forests, which are the lungs of the planet, will die. And they're burning. As you mentioned earlier on the dust that settles down in foliage, it's an incendiary. You have not only forests that are being droughted out, poisoned, and then now you have much more incidents of dry lightning. Had 100 million acres burned in Siberia this year alone. Everybody knows about the record fires here. I mean, every single part of the system is being decimated by these programs, and this is really an issue that people have to take up.
Now, our guest is Dane Wigington, who's also in the film Why in the World Are They Spraying? And it's just a remarkable documentary. I know you've got some strange weather out by you. Do you want to tell listeners what has happened?
Well, how about yesterday? We had 5 tornadoes south of us in California, never before recorded in October. Tornadoes are an absolute rarity any time of year in California, but they've never been recorded in October. Had 5 yesterday. So the weather is off the rails completely. And again, when you are decimating the system from top to bottom, we should expect that. And it's going to get a whole lot worse from here as these guys continue to monkey with these natural systems. It's going to get very ugly. And again, the drought alone, Jeff, there is simply no other explanation but the saturated atmosphere with particulates. The science is very clear on this. It causes drought, period, end of story. And so, again, they are completely hijacking all the natural systems at this point, and we should expect much, much worse outcomes from here.
Now, there was a story that came out a few days ago about a Swedish politician who spoke out on the aerosol operations that she was witnessing based on a newspaper story that had tried to normalize the aerosol operations and condition people like they've done here in this country. But she spoke out about that. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dane?
I did. I do. I saw the story, and I salute the courage of those few, and there aren't many, but I suspect as time goes on and awareness of this grows and the totality of what they're doing becomes apparent, that some of those that have been silent in the political arena and the scientific arena will begin to speak out as they realize this ship is going down with all of us on it, including them. I would hope we see more and more courage as she showed. But I, as I've told you, Jeff, I've been in Barbara Boxer's office. I've been in high-level EPA meetings. I mean, right now the system is bought, sold, paid for, and there's no honor in it. But I think as the awareness grows that this will sink the entire ship and is doing so by the day, I think we'll see more people start to sing like canaries. I really do.
I would love to hear that tune. I just want to clarify some things about geoengineering, what you said, in that the geoengineering is proposed to be used as a safeguard, as a fail-safe to stop the runaway warming of the planet. However, you assert that stop the geoengineering right now that's being done. It gets confusing, listeners, so, and that's not an accident. Stop the geoengineering right now and let the Earth heal itself. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, and it's not just my assumption. You have NASA admitting that the what they call condensation trails, even though they are up to their eyeballs in these programs themselves, are actually warming the planet. And in that admitting that geoengineering, because these aren't condensation trails we're seeing, they're particulate trails. So you have one branch of NASA admitting this is warming the planet, while another branch is helping it happen. And the science is quite clear, and it's becoming clearer by the day. Although geoengineering can and does create large-scale but short-term cooling anomalies, and we do see that around the globe, amazing fluctuations in temperature. People are certainly taking notice. The geoengineering can create these cooling anomalies over large regions, but it comes at the cost, Jeff, of a much worsened overall situation. So by trying to mask something for a time, they're making our overall situation much, much worse. In fact, so worse that really life on Earth is called into question at this point. They are looking at this in a very short-term way and absolutely pushing everyone off the cliff while they proceed with these programs. So it's imperative people realize the scope or the decimation these programs are causing, and however violent the weather might be when they stop for a time, the Earth simply has to be allowed to respond. We can't possibly engineer our way out of this, and we're only making it worse.
Right, and so you've pointed that out, and you've also pointed out that hurricanes actually clean the atmosphere as whirlpools clean the oceans.
It's a mechanism the planet has for responding, of course. I mean, as the planet warms, for every degree of Fahrenheit warming, the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture. We should be getting more rain, not less. The boreal forests should be getting more moisture and thriving and uptaking this carbon. But instead of becoming a carbon sink as the planet warms, and that's the planet's mechanism of compensating, they're becoming a carbon source. They're emitting carbon because they're being poisoned, because they're being droughted out, because they're being burned. The ozone layer being shredded, also another source of decimating the foliage in the forest, which are the lungs of the planet. So you can see that there is so many ways that these programs are doing nothing but harm in order to try to hide something for a very short time and bamboozle people into thinking that maybe the planet's not warming. They're making our situation more dire by the day, Jeff.
Dane, I wanted to ask you if what your assessment is in the impact that this film has had in bringing awareness to the population.
I think it's helped a lot so far, Jeff, but we certainly have a long ways to go. And if people research this issue again and they understood the gravity of it, if they understood that really all is riding on this at this point, they would get a copy of this film. And they can make copies, by the way. This is important. Once they have an original copy of this film, it is not copyrighted, thanks to the generosity of Michael Murphy, who is in this only for the cause.
That's true.
As are all of us. And they can duplicate these and circulate them to others. And so, you know, it's up to all of us to get the word out till the whole population knows. And that's really our best chance at bringing this programs to a halt. So it's imperative to circulate this film. And I think you'd find few that would argue with it once they watched it.
Right. You know, I did help out in some of the interviews. I was able to interview one of the atmospheric scientists in Dr. Fleming, who was really great in exposing how it's just not a good idea to do any geoengineering at all, even though he doesn't think that the ongoing aerosol operations are being done. But I suspect he might not have a vantage point of seeing that every day because he's got to teach class every day. So
many of these people, Jeff, are just afraid to state publicly what they know damn good and well is going on. And as I've told you before off the air, that I've spoken to NOAA scientists 2 months ago who admitted off the record that they absolutely know these programs are going on, and they're, in their words, alarmed as hell. Academia is just afraid to speak out. But if we can all raise awareness to the level where it can no longer be hidden, I think the dam will break from 100 different directions. We'll have people from all aspects of this science issue screaming.
What will a successful awareness and campaign to stop the geoengineering look like to you, Dane?
People from their own home computer can seek out journalists, groups, and organizations that would care if they only knew. That can autism, ADD, Alzheimer's, ag groups, forestry groups, health groups. I mean, and the list is endless. Send them a heads up. Send them some credible articles. Send them a source for more data like geoengineeringwatch.org. Better yet, send them a copy of the DVD that your station is generously offering and start these spot fires of awareness so that those people can then take the ball and run with it too. People would care if they only knew. Most have no idea, and it's up to all of us, and we can all help tremendously by this sort of awareness-raising campaign, even from our own homes.
That's right. Thank you for explaining that, Dane. I know KPFK has been also using this DVD as a premium as well. So KPFK and WBAI seem to be the only radio outlets terrestrially that are bringing this information out to people.
On that note, Jeff, if I could elaborate again, those of us that are in this battle never wanted this. This is the last thing we wanted to spend all our time and resources on. But if people research this issue, they will come to the conclusion that short of nuclear catastrophe, it is the greatest and most immediate threat that we face, period, and that is not an alarmist statement. They will come to that conclusion, and that's why we're in this battle. And again, the gravity of this issue cannot be overstated, and I completely salute your stations for having the courage to address this. And if people look into this issue, they will find what I'm saying to have merit and be backed up by science fact.
I know we just got a couple minutes with you. I know you're very busy, Dane, with other radio interviews, which is fantastic. But if you can tell listeners a little bit about your appeal to the whistleblowers in the military as well.
Yeah, in the course of raising awareness, Jeff, we hope that very soon we can reach that critical mass where those in the military, our brothers and sisters in the military, who we salute their service, but plead with them to investigate this issue, because although I'm sure they're being told, those participating in these programs are being told that they are doing some benevolent act for the common good, it could not be further from the truth in the case of geoengineering. And we implore them to look into this issue, to investigate it for yourself, and please refuse to participate in what is the extermination of Earth life systems slowly but surely. And so we appeal to our military brothers and sisters again to investigate this issue themselves and not just accept what they're being told, because we will all go down in this ship together if these programs continue.
You were at the Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails event in Los Angeles, and did you feel that that was a successful presentation that would inspire whistleblowers to come forward?
Yes, the person who put that on, John White, exceptional individual, did that at tremendous expense to himself to try to expose this issue. I think any future events like that will focus solely on geoengineering and not have any of the other topics that were discussed there. But I do think it helped to raise awareness a lot. And John White, who put that on, is an exceptional human being who did that at tremendous personal expense. That was not a profit-making venture, as some people would like to think. So for people like him, I wish we had more because, again, with the course we're on right now, in a few short years with the methane expulsion, and if the spraying continues, our bank accounts aren't going to mean anything. So we should all pick up this torch while we can, while we still have any chance to stop these programs.
I agree. And Dane, I really have to thank you so much for clarifying these really complicated ideas, concepts here that are related with geoengineering, what's going on in with the weather, the upper atmosphere, and the spraying, and the melting of the Arctic, how it all plays together. And it takes an engineer's mind, a scientist's mind, to sort all that out and untangle it. And you've done just that, and I'm really grateful for that. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the courage of your station and your own, Jeff. So thank you for all your efforts.
All right. Talk to you later.
Take care, amigo.
Bye. Dane Wigington, who is also on this DVD, Why in the World Are They Spraying? He is a powerhouse of information, but generally a powerhouse. And really thankful that he has also brought this information to many, many people. He's an engineer. He's got a brilliant mind and is able to sort through the complicated information, the disinformation, the propaganda, and the lies. That was an interview with Dane Wigington, conducted during the fundraiser on WBAI. Again, thank you, listeners, for pledging your support to this station. And a big thank you to the station staff that continues to keep WBAI on the air. And let's all do the best we can to help each other through this. This is In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next week, Monday, 10 p.m.